this side of the tape, I'm going to ask some questions with you or share some information and talk about the Kissinger, David Rockefeller, Shah of Iran, Jimmy Carter connections to what's going on with the crisis that keeps building up overseas and the unanswered questions, or maybe the questions that the right questions aren't being asked. Jack Anderson has had two good articles this past week. One, early warnings about the Shah of Iran, and he brings up the subject that in the back room of Washington, everyone seemed to know that the Shah was bad news. He says the State Department didn't want him in the United States, and the Central Intelligence Agency was against bringing the Shah of Iran here. Both of them were against it. So why would Jimmy Carter go against the State Department, and why would he go against the Central Intelligence Agency? Who else would want him here? There would only be three agencies or persons then that would want him in the United States. One, the Defense Department, because it would be the excuse to get that increased budget we're getting, an excuse to force Europe to put their nuclear missiles on the base, to get more warheads, to get more ships. We're going to increase by billions of dollars that budget and use our military that's becoming very heroic to defend us, so that the Defense Department came out ahead on this. Jimmy Carter came out ahead. As I said weeks ago, some people didn't believe me when I was talking about this on the tape, that as a war president, the people are rallying around him, the family, the hostages. One woman was on TV with Barbara Walters. If her husband died, she's used to sacrifice. There wouldn't be anything wrong with it. The Defense Department comes out winning, the National Security Agency, and also the people that have the Shah in this country, who probably are controlling that narcotics market. So the people that would gain from him being here, even if the CIA and the State Department didn't want it, would be those particular agencies. And also that Kissinger-Rockefeller combine, because those billions of dollars of the Shah's money went into that bank, which would be bankrupt or damaged seriously if it was pulled out. And also, if the Shah were overseas, as I say, in other countries, if he started to talk about what he knows, this country would be down on its knees if he was angry enough after being deposed and sent out to let him be in any other country. Well, Jack Anderson asked why, if the CIA and the State Department didn't want him, how did he get here? He said that Cyrus Vance had warned of the dangers in July 26th of the actions of having him here. He used the name of a David Newsom. Remember that name, because it'll come out later in future history or operations, just like Jolly West's name comes out all the time, that he was privy to the warnings, and one of the men in the State Department who handled the Shah's case in coming here. And another man was Henry Precht, who headed the Iranian desk at the State Department and was in touch of matters and knew it was combustible, but went ahead with the plans. Jack Anderson then went on to say that he asked, why was the Shah here? The compelling question is why? Why were our leaders determined to admit the Shah? Why did they do it? Contrary to the best interest of the United States, Jack Anderson is asking, and loyalty can't be the only justification. He said their greater obligation was not to the Shah, but it should have been to the national interest. The pressure came primarily from David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger. Despite the disclaimers, there was a relentless campaign in Washington. The Rockefeller-Kissinger alibi that they only made limited personal contacts is pure deception. They directed the campaign. They pulled the strings. They enlisted others to join in the pressure. And Jack Anderson says they have multi-million dollar financial ties to the Shah. But they also have Kissinger and Haig and Brzezinski and their trilateral commission in charge of the White House. And I think they would prefer a war rather than give up that power. And that's why they insisted on bringing the Shah here, because then it brings military altercations, protects their banking interests, and keeps their power. Their power is definitely behind Jimmy Carter. And all of a sudden, the Shah comes here, and Jimmy Carter's rating, according to the polls, makes the biggest jump of any president since the last war. And Ted Kennedy, who said the Shah was a crook and stole from his people and was cruel, his so-called ratings go down. The next day, Jack Anderson had another important article called Kissinger Blamed for the Iranian Crisis. Now, remember, Mr. Kissinger is the man who took credit for stepping in and running the White House when Richard Nixon cracked up. He also had a big role in overthrowing Allende in Chile and the Cambodia bombings and a lot of disasters that have happened to their country. Anderson said that Kissinger's responsibility for the oil prices going up in 1973 is well known. He had written about that, and I've done other tapes on that, that Rockefeller was the benefactor of the increased oil prices. He refers to the close relationship that Kissinger and Rockefeller have had for years that's gone on for many, many years, that Rockefeller has appointed Kissinger to take care of their investments, and he's behind the Rockefeller family international contacts. I've talked on tapes about the Saudi Arabia interest in holding down the oil price and how King Faisal was murdered and 2 days after Kissinger was there in Saudi Arabia, and then the prices jumped up, and this increase of oil prices made more money for the oil companies and for Exxon and Standard Oil. And he also goes into the background of how Mossadegh was nationalizing the oil companies, and the CIA was closely tied to the Rockefeller interests and put the Shah in 1953, and in return, the dominant oil company for the American Iranian Oil Consortium that once belonged to the British oil company in Iran went to Exxon, and therefore then the Shah made Chase Manhattan his favorite bank and put his money there, and the oil prices quadrupled 4 times over. So Jack Anderson goes into the close relationship of the Shah to Chase Manhattan and Kissinger to Chase, and the policies of Kissinger allowing the oil prices to go up. There's that very close bond between the profits of oil, the profits of banking, and the Shah as a person. But then there were other articles that were interesting that came out, one in the New York Times, December the 7th. The Shah says that the U.S. aided to overthrow him. Now, this is where the conflict comes in, and this is a little complicated. I hope I'm not going too fast, but the beauty of these tapes, as against radio programs, is you can't play them over and over. And if it's not clear, if the point isn't clear, I can update it on another tape if you write to me. The groundwork is set that Henry Kissinger runs the White House. He is in Nixon's office. Haig is running the office. They represent Nelson, David Rockefeller, Chase Manhattan, and so forth. But their baby is overthrown in Iran, kicked out. How did he get out? If they were doing so well and had those investments, how did they get out? Now, the Shah is coming out with a book, The Deposed Shah, in which he praises Henry Kissinger and even Nixon and blames Jimmy Carter for getting him out of office. He says he was neutralized, that American General Robert Hauser, H-U-Y-S-E-R, came to Tehran, and all he was concerned about was when the Shah was going to leave, that he went over to visit him in January of last year, and Hauser arrived in Tehran for the clear purpose of neutralizing the Iranian army. Now, why would Hauser want to get the Shah out? The Shah says that this happened. He said the American ambassador, William Sullivan, was with him. And he said, all they wanted to know is what day I was leaving. Now, that doesn't make sense if the Shah is so entrenched with all of his arms and weapons and Kissinger and David Rockefeller and that gang on his side. Somebody was trying to get the Shah out, and why? And he has a book, an installment coming, How the Americans Overthrew Me. Now, I believe that he's a captive on this military base, as I said, on the other side, because if he went to another country, he would talk too much. And General Haig has said the reason that he left NATO was that this Hauser, H-U-Y-S-E-R, was sent there and that they got rid of the Shah. The Shah has said at the beginning of January, the Carter administration decided to advise the Shah that it would be best for Iran if he left the country. And he repeats several times another thing in the New York Times. In his memoirs, he says that when the general went to Tehran in January, he was sent there by the Carter administration, and the Carters wanted the Shah out of Iran. Now, Jimmy Carter was put in by the Trilateral Commission and David Rockefeller, but someone behind Carter, and I believe it has to do with the Georgia drug connections. I think Carter is torn two ways down the middle. one with the Georgia narcotics connections, and the others with the Northern Eastern Banker, the Wall Street bankers. And I think both factors had a piece of them in the White House, but that the Southern factor used pressure on Jimmy Carter to get the Shah out. There was an article in the Washington Post, December the 6th, this last week. Many doctors think the Shah could have stayed in Mexico. And it goes on to say that only one doctor, Dr. Benjamin Keene from New York Hospital Cornell, who's a specialist in tropical diseases, not cancer or gastric diseases, and this hospital is heavily endowed by the Rockefeller family, and Lawrence Rockefeller is a life member of the hospital board. This one doctor went down as against any other doctors that were consulted or identified or Mexican doctors and brought the Shah up to New York City. He could have stayed in Mexico. Other people are doing investigative work, the Mayo Clinic, the Boston Globe, and it refers to investigations that he could have been in other places. But I believe that once he was out, once Jimmy Carter and that faction had gotten the Shah out, it was very important to David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger that they have him in this country and not in any other country. And I feel that he is a semi-prisoner kept on a military base in Texas, and that the medical was the excuse to get him here before he continued talking or writing memoirs or went to another country, and that Rockefeller and Kissinger quick grabbed him up here to protect him before he went elsewhere and began to talk more about his anger about the Carter or other faction that got him out of office. Now, one of the clues to this question may be brought up in several articles that are very important. The question of the Shah and the conflict of Jimmy Carter getting the Shah out of his peacock throat in Iran, and the question of why he's in the United States at this time. Last week on tape 418 on the Iranian crisis, I quoted Maxine Cheshire, an article in the Washington Post, on Rosalind Carter, who was photographed with a man, Jimmy Epauletto, who's linked with organized crime, narcotics, loan shark figure, involved in a hashish investigation in Manhattan that involved $50 million. And that appointment, as I said, was set up by John Ellsworth. I've talked about John Ellsworth on another tape. He's a convicted felon, a person that was in the White House with Jimmy Carter, Rosalind Carter, last year, and set up this meeting with Epauletto of organized crime. Well, Maxine Cheshire came out with a marvelous article just this week, 1 week later, in her column. It's called VIP. It's the Washington Post, December the 2nd, 1979. And she goes more into that mysterious connection of John Ellsworth that I brought up last week and several weeks ago. John Ellsworth was also the gentleman who worked for the Rolling Stones Orchestra at the time that the concert was out at Altamont that was set up with the Hells Angels and Melvin Belli, the attorney for Jack Ruby, working with the CIA, also set up the Hells Angels as a security, and Sonny Barger, the defendant in that trial out here, the Hells Angel trial. Well, this counterintelligence agent by the name of John Ellsworth worked with that team and was out here. He was even photographed in the movie. He used the name John James. That was his alias, and he was filmed in that movie at Altamont as an agent. He was an agent of the federal government. Well, Ellsworth's first contacts with Jimmy Carter were down in the South in 1976. He was making a movie which was never produced, a documentary movie. And then he went in the White House for his international children's appeal. He was going to raise money for children. This was that fraudulent front for an organized crime operation. But this article, The Mysterious Ellsworth, goes into more details about the Middle East and the possible kidnapping of the Shah that may give a little more light into the complicated Carter organized crime connections in the South. This article tells about Mrs. Carter. She went to a luncheon out of the executive office building. It was for Cities in Schools, a favorite project of hers, and this Ellsworth gave her $7,500 for the project. Isaac Hayes, the black musician, gave a concert at Constitution Hall, and then he gave her $60,000 or $70,000 for this project. And what he got in return was calling cards with Chip Carter's name on them for an operation that he was involved in. Now, John Ellsworth was not only involved as an agent for seven government agencies, they're listed in the Washington Post, the various agencies he's worked for. He's been an informant for the Secret Service, the FBI, the Internal Revenue, Drug Enforcement, the CIA, and the Organized Crime Task Force as a government investigator with links to organized crime. But this John Ellsworth has an organization, this International Children's Appeal, that is set up by a group of businessmen that Maxine Chesser writes about, independent businessmen. And she goes into the background of some of the businessmen who are involved with Ellsworth, who not only was photographed with Mrs. Carter and set up a party at the White House at Christmas, but he was there again concerning Middle East affairs. He had a girlfriend, and in March of 79, Ellsworth and his girlfriend were again part of the White House party at the dinner when Egypt and Israeli peace treaties were signed, a very important event, remember, out in the garden with the tent at the White House. And this party, in quotes, helped expand his Middle East operations. He had business partners for this front, this International Children's Appeal, and these are some of the partners he had. For one thing, this Children's Appeal used toy sales that were a front for loan sharking and narcotics operations. Then he had another business partner. This is one of the business partners of John Ellsworth, was a friend of PLO leader Yasser Arafat, and as she said in the Washington Post, that they had plans to take over all hashish growing and trafficking out of Lebanon. Now, that is quite a bit of an operation, because they were arrested in a $50 million hashish operation in New York City, this gang. But they were friends of Arafat's working on drug traffic, the takeover of all hash out of Lebanon. Another partner of this group schemed to kidnap the Shah of Iran, and they were going to use this ransom money for other purposes. Now, this is interesting that the Carter's buddies, this guy that's been in the White House several times, and she's been photographed with their buddies, had a plan, and it doesn't give the date of it, of kidnapping the Shah. Now, if they were going to kidnap him to get rid of him, they could also remove him, such as he blames Jimmy Carter for getting him out of office. So that one of the business partners or groups of John Ellsworth, one of their projects was to kidnap or get rid of the Shah of Iran. They used a toy factory in New York, as I say, for covering their operations. And one of their partners was dealing in laser guns, weapons that could cut trees in half. They had a catalog of laser weapons and were manufacturing these and selling them. Another partner was drilling for oil in Ghana and building a hotel in Cairo with Anwar Sadat's son-in-law as a co-investor. And they were negotiating contracts to split $2 million fees to send Muhammad Ali to the Middle East. In other words, this John Ellsworth, who's at the White House, photographed with Rosalind Carter at Christmas time or at the Hilton Hotel with members of organized crime, who has a front for loan sharking and so forth, these partners of his are very important people. When they talk about the entire hash market out of part of the Middle East, or kidnapping the Shah, or distributing laser guns, or oil in Ghana, or hotels with Sadat's relatives in Cairo, or bringing Muhammad Ali to the Middle East, there's a lot of weight here. Another partner planned to use Carter's contracts to produce a $10 million TV series about presidential assistance. The International Children's Appeal was going to bring in millions, even billions of dollars, and one deal alone was to bring in $400 million. Ellsworth was already rich. He had blown $2.8 million on living since he began this International Children's Group, using the aliases of John James Clifford Ellsworth and Thomas Fiorello. This character and his partners are terribly important. As I say, they're linked to the Secret Service, the FBI, the Internal Revenue, the CIA. Joey the Priest was a person that set up a toy operation that actually was involved with topless bars. Four of his members of that group were arrested on extortion charges, and 16 of them were indicted in New York City in April 79 for hash, cocaine, and marijuana. When James and Jimmy Epoletta were murdered after they were photographed with Rosalind Carter, and people thought that Ellsworth and the Epolettos were getting too visible, Ellsworth got a phone call saying, take care of the Epoletto family, don't be too curious, and take care of the widow financially, which is, of course, an organized crime tradition. Now, John Ellsworth claims he works for the CIA, that he's taken a fall for the CIA, that they owe him money, that he was once involved with a Russian spy ship in Galveston, Texas, in a $6 million meat deal. He also claims he tipped the CIA off that their station chief was going to be assassinated in Athens 6 months before it happened. Remember when the station chief was murdered over there, Mr. Welch, and they blamed Philip Agee and the investigations of the CIA on that this murder took place? Well, Ellsworth claims that they knew 6 months before it happened that the station chief was going to be murdered. So he has a lot of information and works with counterintelligence and worked with assassination teams in Turkey. He talks about his assassination teamwork in Turkey and working with the Secret Service. And when he went before a federal judge in Brooklyn in 1976, he beat the charges because government agencies sent letters on the behalf that said he worked for government agencies. He also claimed that he was responsible with breaking the story of Club 54 in New York City. He got in a fight with one of the owners, Steve Rubell, at a Halloween fundraising party in 1978 and began their troubles with the federal government. Now, what you have here in all this story, this Maxine Cheshire story, is the Carters' associations with persons that have contacts in the Middle East. They not only have them, but Ellsworth is at the White House at a party at the time of the Begin-Sadat meeting, and they obviously have contacts in the drug community in Georgia and around Georgia. And the necessity of getting the Shah removed may have something to do with the narcotics traffic in Asia. It may serve two purposes. It may strengthen the Pentagon as an excuse for war, and it may leave the drug opening to the narcotic dealers. This happened in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam, in the Golden Triangle, that the Pentagon and the warmongers got their contracts and their prestige, and the narcotic traffic escalated domestically so that the mafia made money off the dope, and the military establishment received more power and control because of the war that was going on. Now, just this week, Mr. Civiletti, Attorney General Benjamin Civiletti, disclosed that he had to remove himself from the investigation of the White House influence buying. There's an investigation into financier Robert Vesco. Now, Vesco has worked with the CIA, the narcotics divisions. He's been involved with drug traffic assassination teams. And Vesco has been floating around since Watergate. He ripped off one company for $400 million, the Investment Overseas Organization. And he has been linked through Bobby Hall and Howard Hughes' organization when he was down in Costa Rica to assassination teams and worldwide narcotic traffic. And now there's a hearing, a grand jury hearing in Washington, D.C. that involves the President of the United States, Jimmy Carter, and a question about whether he has not extradited Vesco, that he was paid off or there was a payment to keep Vesco free. Now, again, this links Jimmy Carter to the Vesco connections, and his own attorney general has gone off the Vesco investigation. He disclosed he had to remove himself from the government investigation of allegations of White House influence buying on behalf of the fugitive financier Robert Vesco. In January 1977, Jimmy Carter came into office, and a man, R.L. Herring, H-E-R-R-I-N-G, from Georgia, a businessman. I have to look up the records. I believe he was involved also in the Allman Brothers and the musical connections to Jimmy Carter. A Georgia businessman was convicted of federal fraud. And there were stories that he had paid $10,000 to a W. Spencer Lee from Georgia for Robert Vesco, that he had given the money to Lee on behalf of Robert Vesco, who is a fugitive, as I say, and should be brought back to the United States for trial. But then Mr. Lee went to Washington, D.C. and met with a Richard Hardin, a White House aide, in February of 77. That was a month after Carter was in office. And then Hardin, the White House aide, met with Jimmy Carter, and they decided at that time evidently not to extradite Robert Vesco. And Carter sent a note to Attorney General Griffin Bell, his attorney from Georgia, who went on to be the Attorney General of the United States, and it said, "Please see Spencer Lee from Albany, Georgia." Mr. Lee was the person that had been contacted There were several chains of command, as I say, from Mr. Herring to Mr. Spencer Lee, and then Mr. Lee to the White House aide, Hardin, and the Hardin to Jimmy Carter, and then Carter sent a note to the Attorney General, please see Spencer Lee, the man who allegedly was paid $10,000 for the contact. And what happened was that Robert Vesco was never extradited. There have been many articles that we can do later on Billy Carter wanting to be a lobbyist for Gaddafi and working in the Middle East and also allegedly working with Robert Vesco, so that you get this drug connection assassination teams, the Middle East operations, this John Ellsworth and Rosalind Carter connections. And I think there is much more to the Carters with their southern contacts as much as there is to their trilateral northern contacts. As I say, I think there's a split there. And because the Shah's family was so notoriously into the narcotic business, it's interesting that if he's kept here, as I believe he could be, if he was going to be kidnapped to take over the drug turf, a perfect way to take over his operations or to silence him would to keep him from getting back into them or continuing them, or his family continuing them, and by having him on the army base, he's literally just tied up, and his money is stuck there with in Chase Manhattan with David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger, and they have their Shah sitting at an army base where they can keep a good eye on him instead of being in Mexico or Panama or Argentina or Paraguay or Uruguay or South Africa. He's very safe, even at the risk of going into World War III, because, as I say, the Pentagon wouldn't think it was a risk. It's helped Jimmy Carter, and it gives him war powers, more money for weapons. So the Shah is serving several purposes by sitting down at the army base in Texas. The same. And Jimmy Carter came in as a man representing the oil companies with links down in Georgia, the assassination teams, and organized crime, and a Annapolis graduate from the military. And as president of the United States, in the 3 years that he's been there, he has served his masters well. No matter what you think of Mealy Mouth Carter, he has served David Rockefeller, the Pentagon. He is in the news this last week asking for more nuclear weapons, nuclear rapid deployment forces, increase of the Pentagon budget. He has his Shah tucked away. The families of the hostages are ready to accept the fact that it would be patriotic if members of their family died. Nobody thinks a thing about the Shah, and whoever would have kidnapped him in the first place who wanted the drug market has it now, because, as I say, he's tucked in his place. And Jimmy Carter has been strategically perfect to Annapolis, Navy intelligence, the trilateralists, the oil companies. They're talking about more 50-cent tax on every gallon of gas. The oil has gone up tremendously, the gasoline, our expenses. We're paying for this, and we're paying for the war. But he has served those masters right down the line and given them everything they wanted, which was really a stroke of genius in the past 3 years. I will be making a tape next week, but it won't be there in time to give to you. If we wish you happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, and Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate, we celebrate all of them. And enjoy the holidays. And the world is crazy. The leaders are crazy. Most of the people are insane. It looks dismal, but I never get discouraged. I still find life challenging and interesting, and keep your spirits up and do the best you can and look at the world for a lot of the good and fight for the things that are good and work for what's good and right and have fun. The holidays are a time to have fun, so enjoy yourself, and I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and you take care, and we'll meet again. It'll be just before Christmas next week.